Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my sweet loves. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. How are you guys today? Hope you're well. I hope today is a good day. I always hope today is a good day. And if it's not, here we are. Let's fucking face it, right? Okay. So I just got back from California. It was freaking great. Oh my God, did I need it? You know, when you don't realize how bad you needed something till you do it or get it. And then the relief associated is just pretty big. I haven't done anything fun in so long. I haven't done anything for the sake of joy. I mean, I'm not trying to sound joyless. I have a wonderful life and I steal as many moments of joy as I can. But this trip, along with a little tiny bit of work, was really mostly to celebrate a dear friend's birthday and to be in the space of beautiful people and exciting opportunities. And it was just great. It was great. So here I am. I'm back. I'm kind of filled up. My cup is full, which is something I needed and something now I have. And that's something I really need when I do the work that I do, because it involves a lot of giving, which is completely joyful for me, but also requires a full cup. So remember that you need a full cup in order to give to others. And if you are feeling depleted, if you're feeling like your cup has run dry, pause and figure out just a little thing you can do to fill that cup up. Even if it's a walk in nature, some deep breathing exercises, connect with a friend, watch a TV show, like do what you need to do to fill your cup. You cannot give from what you don't have. Okay. So anyway, that's what I did for myself in Cali. Now I am back. Exciting times ahead. So now as I speak to you, we are beginning the month of March, which means I'm counting down just about 5 weeks away from my retreat in North Carolina. So I'm hoping I'm going to see you there. I'm really excited for it. And so much other exciting stuff is happening and more to be announced very soon. In the meantime, before we get into it today, just so you know, if you are curious about anything we're talking about, just hop on over to thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the resources tab. If you want to study with me at a retreat, click on the retreats tab. I have so much free information there to get you started. Okay, here we are. So today I want to talk about a Buddhist concept called the second arrow. I have been thinking about it a lot lately around the concept of shame, mostly because oftentimes we have a feeling, a big feeling that makes us uncomfortable. And then so quickly, so that feeling would be the first arrow, which is necessary and human, and we can't get around that. But what's interesting about human beings is if we are not vigilant and cognizant, oftentimes without knowing it, unconsciously, we sling at ourselves the second arrow, which is shame about the first big feeling. You know, let's say the big feeling is, oh God, I'm so overwhelmed by my relationship right now. It's just making me sad and insecure, and I feel unsure about it, or I feel scared that I'm unsure about it. That's a feeling. The second arrow is, what's wrong with you? Why can't you just show up for things? This shouldn't be so hard. Other people seem to be fine in their relationships. Why are you so weak, right? Feel that? That's shame, and that's the second arrow. Now, the second arrow isn't always shame, but I, in the past, have been thinking about it along the lines of shame and have been wanting to discuss it here. So that was kind of simmering in my side burner. And then last night, I was on the phone with a new friend, and we were talking about the concept of fear and its relationship to insecurity. I don't even remember how we got on the topic. But what I said was, I thought fear was a primary feeling or the first arrow, And insecurity struck me as the second arrow. So fear is a human experience, and fear is a necessary human experience. We feel fear because our nervous system is primed to keep us alive, and a fear response, otherwise known as fight or flight or freeze or fawn, is associated with a signal that might be telling us this is truly dangerous. And if something is truly dangerous, we need that feeling of fear in order to move away from it. The problem with, of course, complex modern human life is a lot of the things we fear are not threats to our survival. They're oftentimes triggers from things from the past, or, you know, touching into places of our repressed trauma, or just, you know, feelings that feel unmanageable, but we're not really sure why. And so, and there's lots of reasons, of course, for modern fear. So, you know, when I was thinking about the concept of insecurity, insecurity, of course, is something that's much more thinky. You know, insecurity requires us to take a look at ourselves and scan the landscape to figure out where we think we're falling short. And so that's really the second arrow. It's really the second arrow. And not to say that the second arrow is meaningless or unnecessary. It's just in order to really fully feel into our lives, which of course is what we're all doing here, because the purpose of this work is to unearth our repressed emotions that are potentially triggering us into physical, emotional, and mental distress. The work is also about improving our ability to see ourselves. So we don't want to repress our emotions. We want to be able to excavate them and see them. But we also want to be able to pause and be mindful as we live our lives. And without understanding the concept of this second arrow, we really can so easily, unconsciously allow it to sling again and again and again. So the primary feeling, which might have begun as a natural fear, a fear born of something that is bringing us into a childhood memory or is just a human reaction to something that seems unsafe, can become shame, can become insecurity, can become judgment of ourselves, can become self-loathing. And those things bring a lot of more big feelings that require repression. So you can see this can end up being sort of a tumbleweed of reasons for distress. So let's talk about it for a second. Let's talk about the second arrow in general, because I think it's a really fascinating concept, because it's not just about what people might perceive as negative things. So, you know, let's just say basically, most people on its face perceive fear as a negative thing. Nobody wants to feel fear. And of course, insecurity born of fear is also seen as a negative thing. But I think there's also big feelings associated with desire. And when I was doing some research on the second arrow, the concept of the second arrow in Buddhism, it really talks a lot about how we multiply our own suffering. So here's something that I read. It's taken from Medium. When we expect something, especially something that will give us pleasure, and we don't get it, we inflict even more pain on ourselves. So the best way to avoid that second arrow is to pinpoint that moment when our desires become expectations. Desire all you want, but don't let that desire turn into an expectation. So that's interesting, because that's the second arrow that I hadn't necessarily thought of. You know, I thought about fear, I thought about shame, I thought about sadness. You know, for example, let's say something negative happened to you. You had a breakup, or you lost somebody that you love, or you didn't get the job you wanted, or a friend is shutting you out. That's sadness. That could bring grief and sadness. But the second arrow after a period of time could be the shame or the judgment of, why haven't you moved on? You know, it's enough already. What's wrong with you, kind of thing, you know? And so when I thought originally about the second arrow concept, that's what I was thinking of. But this other piece of it, I think, is equally important. The pinpointing the moment when our desires become expectations and how that leads to our suffering. Because really the net of this work here is to be able to be conscious. We want to live consciously. When we're living consciously, we have big feelings, because, by the way, spoiler alert, we're never having a moment of human life without big feelings. This is why we're here. We're here to feel big, and we have no choice about that. And sometimes that feels great, and sometimes that feels really threatening. So we're not going to get out of our big feelings, but we can manage them and not allow for repression when we live consciously. And so this whole second arrow concept is really about pause, which you hear me talk about until I'm blue in the face. And I'm so sorry, because I know you're probably all so sick of it, but it's so imperative in healthy living to understand the concept of pause, to understand the concept of creating that space between a stimulus and a response, between something that triggers us and our human response or reaction to it. You know, oftentimes you hear that saying, it's healthier to respond rather than react. Well, the difference between response and reaction is that pause. It's that space where we get a chance to be conscious and make choices. And as you often also hear me say, having choices means that we are free. Freedom is predicated upon the truth that we have choice. People who have no choice are not free. And so we're all here looking for freedom. We're all here looking for some solace and some comfort. And so that is found through being as conscious as possible. So, you know, given the fact that we have no control over our reflexive responses to life. So some reflexive responses are super, super technical, meaning I put my hand on a hot stove, I reflexively remove it. That's a reflexive response. You know, a gut feeling, if you can cultivate your gut, which I think is an incredibly important practice to really touch into your deep knowing and your intuition, a gut feeling can be a reflex. You know, something just repels you. As soon as you see it, ooh, that doesn't feel right to me. You know, there's a reflex. Reflexes can also be learned, reflexes through life. So I'll give you one of mine. I was really lectured and yelled at a lot as a kid by my dad, who was a really discontented human. And so I have a reflex that when someone is raising their voice or lecturing me in a way that feels really disembodied, in a way that doesn't feel like it's about me, it feels like they're kind of on a diatribe about what they want to tell me without really seeing me as a human being, I shut down. It's a reflex. It is a reflex because I shut down to protect myself as a survival instinct as a child, to endure that kind of treatment. And so when someone's yelling at me, I can't really hear them. It's really interesting. I can't really take in what they're saying. I see and literally hear them, but it's not making an impact on me as a reflex. But here's what's interesting over the years, not that I want to invite people to yell at me, but over the years, through this work that I have done, the work that I teach and I carry to you, I've learned that I can actually pause and not do that second arrow. So the second arrow for me when I'm being yelled at is I'm unable to listen. I'm unable to process. I'm unable to handle this. That would be the second arrow. So I can now pause in the space of that and practice self-care. So instead of the second arrow, say I notice that I'm feeling really uncomfortable because this is the way I've always felt when someone's talking to me. I can look at that person, not talking to me, yelling at me. You can talk to me. I can look at that person. I can see what's going on for them. I might not be okay with it, but I can pause and I cannot take it as a personal affront. I can say, I see that this is about them. I see that they are really struggling to make their point right now. They have some demons they're working out. And I can also do an actionable item, which is kind of beyond the second arrow, but an actionable item, which say, you know what? I'm going to step out of the ring right now. I actually don't choose to stay here while I'm being treated that way. And that's a boundary. So I'm moving into a lot of different topics, but the point is, we have reflexive reactions to life, and that's the first arrow. And we should be really, truly self-compassionate about those things, because there's no changing them as reflexes. There's just changing our response. And so, let's say, for example, you're at work, and your boss says, you know, Nicole, you screwed this one up again. I just asked you to you know, fill out this form and you made a mistake or whatever. I don't know. I'm just picking something. Your first arrow is to feel a sting of maybe shame or anger or embarrassment, you know, whatever you might feel from that. That's okay. It's hard when someone criticizes us. Doesn't matter. You could have had the happiest childhood in the world. It's hard when someone criticizes us. But then the second arrow, what's wrong with you, Nicole? You always screw things up. Can't you do anything right? You're going to get fired from this job because you're always a mess. Get it together. That is not necessary, and that's not helping you. That's just continuing to play those tapes of things that haven't served you in the past. By the way, to criticize and shame ourselves does not help us improve. I think that's like a mistaken concept in life, that if we can just, you know, ride ourselves a little bit harder, we will improve. You know, there's a saying, if hating yourself was going to work, it would have worked by now. So, you know, just keep that in mind. You're not doing yourself any favors by inflicting the second arrow. And if you're conscious, you'll feel that first sting and then you'll immediately press the pause. I've got my pause button on my 80s tape recorder that I wear on my imagined holster on my hip. And whenever I feel that really deep trigger, I just reach down gently and I press that pause button. I let it stay down and I say, what's going on here? Okay, so let's use this work example. What's going on here is I messed it up. I obviously didn't do something correctly. What's also going on here is this person who's criticizing me is out of line. You don't have to be so personal about it. You don't have to be such a jerk. So that's their stuff. So also what's going on here is I'm watching another human being enact their stuff on me, or, you know, into the ether. Whether it's on me is my choice, whether I'm going to pick it up, what they're putting down. And so I'm here with my pause and I can say, and I can feel that second arrow coming. I might even see it in the air on the way to me, which is, you're such a screw up. You know, why again did you do this? Or why are you always like this? Always and never are always pretty good indications of the second arrow. And I can pause and I can say, first of all, that's not helpful. Second of all, I do a lot of things right. I'm actually a really loving, good person. I obviously was being careless here, and or I wasn't, or I tried my best and this form was really confusing. I don't need to judge myself, hate myself, shame myself right now for it. It's not going to help me improve. It's not going to make my boss feel any differently about me. It is just going to cause more feelings that need to be repressed that could potentially contribute to this mind-body system that I'm living in, that we're all living in, that tends to elicit chronic anxiety, pain, illness, disruptions in my system. So I don't need that. We can press pause and we can mitigate that second arrow, and it works. So let's talk about the concept of desire and expectations. Dude, I was so excited when I read that, when I was doing this research, because I like it that this is not just about negative stuff and stopping further negative stuff. This is that sticky place where sometimes positive stuff like desire can create suffering. And I know desire creates suffering. I mean, my goodness, I am a big desirer. I would say, honestly, desire causes more suffering for me than like pain and criticism and someone being mean to me. I don't know why. I think it's because it's interesting. When you're a person that has a capacity, huge capacity for joy and for celebration, I think you also have a huge capacity for suffering over expectations and how badly you want those, that celebration. So I'll speak for myself, how badly I want that celebration. So I mean, it's happened to me over and over again in my work. You know, I'll get like a little hint of somebody giving me a bit of a platform, you know, and I'm not talking about a social media platform. I'm talking about over these last 20 years, if someone give me an opportunity maybe to share it or to bring it to a greater audience, and like, I get so full of desire. I can fill up with desire like a pitcher to the top, and an excitement and joy. Like it's actually a great feeling. But so essential to continue to pinpoint that desire, that moment when desire becomes expectation. Oh my goodness. Expectation is the root of all heartache. That is William Shakespeare. William Shakespeare, one of my favorite quotes, expectation is the root of all heartache. So here we are having desire morph into expectation. So now my big desire to share my work is like kind of become a need for something to work out the way I want it to work out, because the expectation is that when it does, it's going to lead to this, or when it does, I'm going to feel a certain way. And here is where the second arrow becomes the expectation rather than the shame, something I hadn't expected when I decided to talk about this. And so how brilliant that we can think about both sides of the coin, that we can pause and not allow the sling of that second arrow. And I think the temptation, unfortunately, I guess I'll speak for myself because I'm sure at least one of you out there will feel me here, is that when you have desire, expectation feels good. I mean, it's really definitely the root of all heartache, but it feels good because it feels like fantasizing and getting excited about something and then visualizing in your mind what it will be. And I don't want to take that from you, because I also am a big believer in manifesting, and I'm a big believer in magic and in energy and in creating and in, you know, bringing our dreams to reality. And that requires that kind of excitement. So I really think it's really that such a fine line between all of that beautiful desire and manifestation and magic and energy, and when it creates an expectation that if we don't get the thing that we want, there will be suffering. And so I really just think this is a conversation. This is a dialogue. This is not me telling you there's a solution to this, or even putting it in the same arena as the word solution, because this isn't about solving. This is just about being mindful and conscious of the way we live. Because when we're mindful and conscious of the way we live, we get to have our pause. When we get to have our pause, we get to have a response rather than a reaction. And when we get to have a response rather than reaction, we get a choice. And choices mean we are free. And that's all we want. You know, I mean, I hear people all the time saying all the cliches, do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? You know, and I think the same thing. Do you want to be, you know, perfect and pleasing everyone all the time and straight A student, or do you want to be free? And I promise you, you want to be free. You know, you might say, no, I want all those things. But as you know, if you're ever listening to me talk about stuff, which you kind of are because here you are, life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. There is no such thing as what hurts versus what's awesome. If it were, then life would be just amazing. It's not like that. It is what hurts versus what hurts worse. Everything has a side effect. You know, whether it's, do you want to have that donut? Or do you want to have that child? Everything has a side effect. Everything has lots of side effects. The simple things like, do you want to have that donut? The side effects are much less complicated than having that child. But, you know, the point is that everything in life is weighing what we want, what we desire, with the parts of it that will be hard. And in life, when we are working with decisions and states of being, like, do I need to be perfect here? Does it feel good to be perfect here? Does it feel good to be a people pleaser? Some parts of you will say it does, because those things have kept you safe and alive when you were a kid, and pleasing everyone, like your abusive parents, felt like it was survival. But now, today, as a grown-up human, being a people pleaser, fawning, and betraying yourself, forsaking yourself, might hurt worse. It might. And here's where we can pause and say, the first arrow, my reflexive reaction to a person's displeasure with me, is to fawn. My reflexive reaction is to fall all over myself, to sublimate my own needs, and to show up for that other person the way they need me to show up. That's the first arrow. But the second arrow is all the side effects of that, all the repression necessary, all the shaming yourself for doing it, all the lying to yourself that your needs aren't important. That's the second arrow. And when we are engaging with the second arrow, there it's really up to you, but I often think it puts you into the situation where that hurts worse. And you might say, but I don't know how to be any other way. So let's talk about the solution for a second, because we talk a lot here about what is. And I do think it is essential to talk about what is, because as I often quote Danielle Laporte, transformation begins with the radical acceptance of what is. So there we have the sacred paradox. We don't want to accept what is because it feels like acceptance means agreement and it means resignation, which, by the way, it doesn't. Acceptance just means, I see, here we are. So if transformation begins with the radical acceptance of what is, I spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about what is. And what is that so many of us unconsciously, completely walking around asleep, are slinging ourselves with that second arrow 100 times a day. So that's what is. And then we have the solution. So let's talk about the solution. Living in the solution means, first of all, we surrender, we lay down our weapon, and we practice the radical acceptance of what is. Here we are. This is a human life. We've had whatever experiences we've had up until now that have informed our conscious and unconscious thinking. Here we are. That's acceptance. And so, you know, you might say, but Nicole, I fawn. That's what I do. Or I need to be perfect. I feel like I'm going to have a panic attack if I'm not perfect. And that really feeds into my OCD or, you know, whatever, wherever you find yourself. And I would say, I get it. And then you'd say, I don't know how to be any other way. This is how I'm built. And here's where I'm going to gently and lovingly disagree. I think that people so often fall into that talk, that self-talk of like, this is who I am. This is how I am. This is just who I am. And I say, yes, I hear you. I have done that to myself over and over again in the years. And then I have learned that gentle, patient, and persistent and consistent work on oneself through a journal speak practice, through a meditation practice, it changes, quote unquote, who you are. It opens space. It makes space to decide, do I still want to be this way? I was such a perfectionist for so many years. You guys don't even know. I felt like it was life or death for me to show up a certain way. And it was hurting so much worse in ways I had no idea. It was requiring me to repress so much of myself, and it was causing me to be in significant chronic pain. This is as a very young person. And over the years, as I've done this work, as I've cultivated my meditation practice, which I say this all the time, if I can meditate, anyone can meditate, because I'm such a going 100 miles per hour kind of person. And I do. I meditate every day. And through my journal speak practice, I have made space and I can show up imperfectly now. It still stings. It stings. It's still uncomfortable to show up and to let my flaws be seen. But two things have been the side effects of that. The first is that it has made me so much more appealing to people. Nobody likes a perfect person. Nobody even likes a perceived perfect person. It's spiny. It's rigid. It's intimidating, quite frankly. And it's not warm and comforting. And I think me being able to show up imperfect has made me a person that other people can approach, you know, which makes me full of connection and joy. And that's like everything. And so there's that. There's that side effect. And the also another positive side effect is I'm not always slinging the second arrow of this is unbearable. So my second arrow is often this is unbearable, right? You're not perfect. This is unbearable. We can't handle this. you know, another person is uncomfortable. That's where codependency can be triggered. You know, like I'm not okay unless everyone else is okay, especially difficult people. So my kid or my parent or my coworker or my best friend is in a mood and icing me out. My second arrow is, so my first arrow is that feels uncomfortable. That feels sad. That feels rejecting, whatever that first arrow is. My second arrow is this is unbearable. I can't breathe. I can't deal with this because of my father. I know all my stuff. And you guys all know all my stuff if you listen to this podcast regularly. But the point is that second arrow of this is unbearable is no longer my truth. And I say that with glory because for so long, I truly would have like the heartbeat and the dry mouth and the I can't breathe if somebody else wasn't okay. And now I still don't like it, but I can live with it. And you know what? Glory, hallelujah, because if you are raising three teenagers or any teenagers or doing anything in life that brings you general stress on a daily basis, if you can't be okay unless other people are okay, you are generally never okay. And I'm living this life right now where I'm living with parenting these kids and all the other things I need to deal with in life. And you know what? I make space for many moments of peace and connection and joy and celebration in my life. And I did not used to when I needed that perfection state, when I needed that codependent people pleasing state in order to be okay. So this is what we're working with. We're working with pause. We're working with a journal speak practice. So you start to learn those deeper, inner, tender parts of yourself. We're working with a meditation practice. Start slow, start small. It doesn't matter. Sitting quietly, walking gently through nature, doing a walking meditation. This stuff is not just pleasant add-ons to life. This is the stuff of life that no one tells you. No one tells you. You go to school and they teach you how to learn the most important things, I guess, that we've deemed important in our society, and they teach you to be good at things, and they teach you to be judged by grades and by different ways of assessing yourself. No one teaches you that this deep inner learning, this ability to pause and hold space for yourself is the foundation upon which all human joy and peace is built. Because wherever you go, there you are. So no matter how good you are at something or how well you learned it, if you are not okay inside, if you are always at war with yourself, flinging that second arrow left and right, I mean, we both know wherever you show up, it's not great. It could be all right, but there is that what hurts worse. There is that side effect of doing that. And so often that leads us into the whirlpool of chronic conditions and illness where it's one thing after the other, and here we are. So I'm glad to have talked about this today. I hope that helped you a little bit. I hope that inspired you to pause and take a look at where you might be slinging your second arrow at yourself. And always just so fun to talk about things that light me up. All right, my dears. Well, it's been fun to be with you guys today. If you're enjoying the podcast, if you could go over to iTunes and rate and review it, it first of all brings me such joy to read your comments. And second of all, it really helps other people find the podcast in the algorithm. And that is a great gift to me and a favor to me. So thank you for that. And until next time, this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.